Well, we'll get to open lines coming up. Here comes my girl in honor of tomorrow night's guest, Nazi wives. The women at the top of Hitler's Germany, and tomorrow night's bumpers will all have to do with well, wives. Not specifically Nazi wives, but you get the idea. Listen, we're not going to do politics. Don't like to do that on a Friday night. I don't like to do it any time on Coast to Coast AM. So a good break for everybody, I think, after what was already a difficult week, some more difficult than others. But you can pick up on any of the threads that we started in the first 2 hours of the show or take us in a completely new direction when we do open lines. That's kind of the whole point. We kind of never know where the show's going to end from this point forward, and I look forward to that. And I'll find out more about where you're going to take us next. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. You know, I got to be honest with you, it was a bonus tonight that I heard from Chicago radio legend Fred Winston on Twitter. I'm very humbled by the fact that he would ever have heard me after how much time I spent listening to him. It was so fun to hear the guys from Firesign Theater on earlier. I did want to throw a shout out to some other legend, though, if I can. John Records Landecker was also a very famous Chicago personality who was very influential and a very nice guy. But can I tell you, he's like really on the progressive side of things. And so this is not a political statement because I'm not trying to make it. But in terms of form, the late night talk show host in Chicago, Peter B. Collins, he was so good, and I would listen to him when he was probably in his 20s, and I would stay up late while I was working on homework. And I, in many ways, I just think that was some of the best overnight radio I'd ever heard. And, you know, the way the clever use he made of bumpers too, and the way that back in that time in radio when people were doing collages of sound that really, in many ways, sound much more like almost like an Alan Parsons Project album or something from Pink Floyd, the mix of sound effects and music and spoken word and other stuff. And I don't get nostalgic for much. I'm always forward thinking and always trying to skate to where the puck is heading in media. But those are the veins that I can't I can't break into them enough. They're very rich, and I think about those times a lot. So thank you for all your kind memories that you were sharing on my Twitter feed at Deacon Punnett. If you're on Twitter, love to keep in touch with you there. In the meantime, I'll get as many people as I can on open lines tonight. Blair was holding on in Sedona on Coast to Coast. Blair?
A homage to Firesign Theater, Ian. Dogs, blue spaceships, the Aztecs invented the vacation. Men and women are the same sex. Our forefathers took drugs. Your brain is not the boss. Everything you know is wrong.
That's so funny. And yeah, I mean, they were just so clever. I hope you enjoyed hearing them on Coast to Coast.
Oh, I think Stan Freberg probably influenced them. Earlier in the 50s when he did St. George and the Dragonette and Green Christmas, that kind of theme.
Right, yeah.
And along with Art Bell talking about theater of the mind, they definitely were a theater of the mind, you know?
Yep, agree. Or they like to call it movies of the mind, which I think is an interesting delineation in that so much of what they sent up was about the movies that they grew up with and the influence on popular culture. But very good. Did you have one other thought you want to throw in?
Well, it was a period that was very fertile. I saw George Carlin perform at the Circle Star Theater in 1973, where Occupation Fool was recorded.
Right.
And, you know, he was a great wordsmith. You know, I still remember things that Mr. Carlin would say about useless things that Americans would buy, like a left nostril inhaler,
right,
a tea straightener. You know, just things like that. Just relax, release, and let go and have a good laugh, you know?
I love that. And I love the fact that, Dennis Carlin, his nephew, listens to the show all the time because Dennis and I talk together on Twitter all the time. Ian is in San Diego. He's in the Ian Club on a wild card line. Ian?
Ian, at your cervix.
Yeah, really, at your cervix.
No, just, you know, as a 20-year-old looking for answers, you know, riding around your car, and just growing up in Chicago and having been exposed to Firesign Theater, just the Vietnam War was going on.
Sure.
It was a crazy time. And the idea that this satire group, I mean, Monty Python was coming from England.
Sure.
Firesign Theater, I got exposed to that. And just listening to Nick Danger.
Yeah.
Nick Danger. It was just incredible.
Well, and the rise of National Lampoon.
Truth to Power. It was like Truth to Power, and it was just fabulous. It really shaped my life, actually.
Yeah, I think the rise of National Lampoon, the Comedy Hour there, the 72-73 period, that was influential. And I think this notion of satire, it has begun to get some traction again. What was interesting, and we barely spoke about it, but I'll just throw it out there, is that I think when I did some research on this a little while ago, there were 20 separate satire groups who were doing satire shows throughout Europe today. And one of the most popular radio shows in Germany for a long period of time was still doing a kind of political satire, and same thing in England. So I just wish we had more of it here, but you brought up some good ones, and thank you. Let me go to Dave, who's in Phoenix on Coast to Coast AM, west of the Rockies. Dave?
Hi. Anyway, hey. I saw Procter and Bergman at it was Procter and Bergman of Firesign Theater,
right,
a small venue in Phoenix. Anyway, but I had this observation that those guys had, you know, they were a big deal early 70s, mid 70s, and they kind of fell away. And then along comes Robin Williams, you know, funny as heck. And I wonder if he ever acknowledged, I mean, a lot of the Robin shtick could have been lifted directly, think about it, directly from
right, the absurdist kind of humor.
Future,
yeah.
That sampling, that future and past sampling that's
right,
crazy that's going on. Just,
that's really good. I hadn't thought about that kind of connection. I'm sure they would have had a thought on that, but I think
they have to have met. I mean, because Robin's the right age that he had to have heard. He had to have been, that had to be one of his formative influences.
I'd be willing to bet you're right. Appreciate that. Good thought. Always good to hear from the PHX. Wildcard line, Gordon is in Plant City, Florida on Coast to Coast. Gordon?
Ian, thanks for taking my call. Listen, y'all are all talented, but you're one of my favorite guest hosts because of your, number one, your deep knowledge on the Bible, but number two, you'll tell it like it is, whether they like it or not, and I appreciate the candid honesty. Along those lines, as you know, I've studied some baby universalism and infant soteriology topics, and I want to, I know you've had a chance to look at that tweet that I sent you about a month or two ago, and so my theory is that when a baby dies before the age of accountability, and I want to get your thoughts on it, that he or she goes into the someplace in the interim and then eventually ends up in the millennium reign in a physical body and possibly reunited with his parents where he can hear the gospel. And just like the angels had free will, the babies don't automatically go to heaven, in my theory, but the Bible doesn't say that. The Bible says, that, as I understand it, that you have to have faith, and a baby doesn't have faith. And so if the angels had free will and if you and I have free will, I think that the babies will get a free will, and in the millennium, at the end of chapter 20, as you know, there's a rebellion. So even in the millennium, which is the new heaven and the new earth, people can have free will and choose to reject. But I think that God is not going to make us into robots or puppets. And so I just, baby universalism, infant soteriology, free will in the millennium. I wanted to get your thoughts on my theory, and I will hang on because you might want to ask me a question. I'm the world's expert on the subject, by the way.
I would be willing to guess you are. And I will have a limited comment, only saying you throw a lot of things together in that pot and you give it a good shake. I think that we'll never know until that time when we're supposed to know. We can guess, we can talk, we can sit around, and as I might be inclined to do, around a fire and a pipe and talk about that. But knowledge is outside of our grasp, in any kind of empirical knowledge. So as theories go, I like to think that all babies are well taken care of, not just on this world, but then in the next. And so I sure hope you're right. Wildcard line, Leroy is in Kansas, or do you call it Leroy? Which one are you? Are you a Leroy or a Leroy?
I'm a Leroy. You can call me anything you want as long as you call me in time to eat.
I get that. I just always like to make sure, because a couple of people do it different ways. Your open lines, where are you going to take us?
Well, first of all, I'm a longtime listener since Art Bell.
Good man.
Yes, he was. May he rest in peace.
I met you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for all that listening. That's a lot of listening.
Well, yes, it is. I listen every night. Okay, regarding your previous guest.
Okay.
About the old radio shows. I took a quick look, and I have 12 tapes, cassette tapes, of the old radio program.
Good.
I've got four of them right here called Radio Detectives, The Shadow, Sherlock Holmes, Alfred Hitchcock, and so on. And I was just kind of wondering if these might be worth anything.
Well, as cassette tapes, no. If you had early, like, Wax Masters or something like that, I'm sure. Those shows. Well, here's what might be worth something, and I wouldn't be the person to be able to tell you. And it actually sounds like you're calling in on an old time AM radio with that buzz on the line. So I'll just give you the answer and you can hear the answer off the air. There are still searches that go on actively for material that has been lost, that does not exist in a vault. So if you bought a commercial package of those, you know, some time ago, I did, I remember probably in my 20s, and I bought a collection of old-time radio, old-time mystery, old-time detective stuff. If you bought that, it's probably not worth anything other than whatever you could get for it at a garage sale. But if anybody ever had tapes or some collection of things that were aired but not saved, we still hear about, through connections I have at like university libraries, some people come in and they turn in stuff that's been in somebody's closet until they passed. And they may have been because they were running a local radio station. It may have been because they bought it when the radio station shut down and they stopped by and they, you know, picked up stuff. So there are some things out there which I know our collectors are still actively looking for that there is no known copy of. So worth checking to make sure before you ever get rid of those things. John is doing a little trucking east of the Rockies in Illinois. John, whereabouts are you as we speak?
Well, I'm just in Carlisle, Illinois, not too far west of there.
Yep, good.
Out on 70.
Open lines, where are you going to take us?
Well, several years ago, you had a gentleman on that said he was the Lindbergh baby. And
yep.
I never did hear anything else about that, what had happened to him.
We tried to get we had him on twice. It would be a great show to go back and listen to on Coast Insider. He was elderly then, and I think we had made an attempt to try to get him on a third time or get an update to see whether any other evidence had come in. He made a really strong case for that.
Yeah, he was going. Wasn't he going to some kind of a court thing to prove it or something like that?
Right. He had been trying to, and so I wonder how it gets resolved. You know, maybe I'll look for that for tomorrow night and see. God bless him. If he's still with us, that's awesome. But I remember he was old then, and so we were, and he indulged us at that late hour to be on live as many hours as he gave us. So thank you for that heads up. I will look into that, and maybe in the first hour tomorrow night before we get to our main guest, Nazi Wives, the book, The Women at the Top of Hitler's Germany by James Wiley. I can get an update for you on Coast to Coast. Love that thought. Thank you for reminding me. What John's talking about is a guy who made the argument that there was a switcheroo and that the baby that we know of as the Lindbergh baby did not die, was not the baby that they recovered weeks later, and that Bruno Hauptmann or others had been working with a mobster. That mobster, if I remember correctly, was the one who was responsible for finding a new home for this baby, and he'd ended up with a family that owned a bar or a restaurant, maybe a grocery store. And he had memories of having met Lindbergh himself, who came poking around to see how he did, and that Charles Lindbergh knew about it, but not his wife. And it was I loved that show. It was real, and the kind of detail that he had and some documentation, very compelling. First, one of the many things I love about doing Coast to Coast. Carrie's in Canada. He's a tasty Canadian on Coast to Coast AM. Carrie?
Hi, Ian. Yeah, how are you?
Good. Where are you going to take us?
First time caller here, Cincinnati.
Glad to have you.
So, yeah, I went to Lindbergh's grave. It's on Maui. That's a pretty beautiful spot, if anybody's been there. But anyway, I've got a James Dean story. So a few years ago, I was taking a road trip down to California with friends down there, and was in Hollywood for a bit, checking out the screenwriting biz a bit. And I went out to Paso Robles, which is about halfway between San Francisco and LA. That's near where James Dean died. And so I followed his route, Black Belt Corners and all that, and went to where he actually died. And there's like a small concrete memorial by the fence where the car
crashed. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I parked my car, walked over there, and then it was really quite interesting that all of a sudden things got quiet. There was no cars and it just got quiet. It was uncanny, you know? So I just, you know, no big deal. I kind of made note of that. And now jump ahead a couple of years, you know, I took pictures and stuff, and I was back home, and I was living in BC at the time. And I was on the island, Salt Spring Island. And there's a lot of fairly wealthy people. It's kind of a rich area of BC. I make note of that because it relates to what I'm going to say here.
Yeah, because so I only have about 45 seconds left. I got to get to the ending.
Okay. So I was on the computer and organizing my photos and stuff. I spent like 2-3 hours. I was organizing and researching stuff, and then I just I took a break. I wanted to go into town, and so I'm driving into town, and I come across this road, and there's a T road coming in, and there's a car that was almost going to jump the stop. It was not it. It's not it.
Okay, you're gonna have to hang on if we're gonna hear the end of the story. That's not the 45 second version of the ending. So hang on. I'd like to know more and tie it all together with Carrie, and then get an open line for you too next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the track is called Clouds by Zach Sobiech, and I wanted to take a minute a couple weeks ago and talk about it, but we were so busy and there was just, the moment didn't feel right. So since we're taking a breath before we get back to open lines and the rest of Carrie's story in a second, I wanted to pass along a little bit of Coast to Coast trivia. And I want to tie that into that song and why it is that it may sound vaguely familiar to you. Disney Plus has been showing a movie, which is essentially the making of that record. I haven't watched it yet. I can't yet. I will. It's hard enough for me to see the promos for it on television. Clouds is the name of the movie. Clouds was the name of the song. Zach Sobiech was the young boy in Minnesota who wrote that song. He was given a terminal diagnosis. He knew he would not live long. And he was already playing on YouTube with his friend, who he would co-write with, and he had a girlfriend on top of that, and she was just adorable, and his parents loved him so much. I got a chance to know the mom a little bit. But what was really neat was the work of a guy named Dan Seaman. He was the cluster manager for Hubbard Broadcasting, in charge of all of the stations, including the one where I worked on a Monday through Friday basis, even when I was doing Coast to Coast back then in the aughts, and into the early teens of 2011, 2012. And Dan got Zach a recording contract, got him a chance to record that song. It became number one for downloads, and in part Coast to Coast had a little bit of an influence on that, and so this is where I'll bring you back to that year 2012. Zach Sobiech had recorded Clouds, and it was getting traction on a sister station of the one I was working on, My Talk 107.1, and it was getting played like a regular record on KS95. I asked Dan, it was just at the very beginning, and I got a copy of it, and I took it and I played it on Coast to Coast that weekend. At the time, I think he had, I want to say, 25 or 35,000 hits already on YouTube for Clouds. And I came on the air that night and I asked, please, let's by the end of this weekend, if we all put our shoulder into it and we listen to it on YouTube, can we get this over 100,000 hits by Monday morning? So you all were wonderful in the way that you responded that night. The listeners all clicked onto YouTube. And then, of course, it was still getting airplay on KS95. I'm not claiming any more credit than is due, and I don't even want it for me. I was really just about you all, and you got that over 100,000, the first 100,000 hits on YouTube he got because of Coast to Coast. It was the first national play that song got, and then it went on to do actually really well, and it was a cute record, and he was such a nice boy. And he played at my going away party when I left to get my PhD, and I'll just never forget it. And I was so happy to see when his mom wrote a book about the record that it got turned into a movie, which you can, if you ever watch it, if you ever want to watch it, it's on Disney Plus. It's very focused. A lot of teenagers and a lot of young adults are enjoying this movie quite a bit. And I just wanted to take that one moment to reflect on it. And for that one little piece of history that Coast to Coast listeners can be proud of, that they played a part in on that record. Some of you may even remember it. And then I used it as a bumper a couple of times after that. But at that point, it was already kind of taken off. It was cool. So I just wanted to play it again. And as long as we're going back over a little bit of history tonight on Coast to Coast, seemed appropriate. And you should watch the movie on Disney Plus. I just start crying. Whenever even when I see the promo for it, I start crying because he was just such a sweet kid. It just breaks your heart to think that anybody should have their life cut so short, so early. That brings me back to Open Lines, though. And then the rest of the story that Kerry was telling about how it was that he visited the grave of James Dean. And then what? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, on a first-time caller line, Kerry in Manitoba was telling us the story of having visited the memorial site for James Dean, where the car crashed. And then you were back home in BC. And then what happened, Kerry?
Yeah, so this was a couple years later. And I was just going through my photos and researching online. And I spent a couple hours, and I was tired, so I wanted to go into town and get some dinner or something. I'm driving into town, and there's a road that tees into the main road I'm driving on. And the car is just about to kind of, you know, how someone kind of jumps, they want to jump into traffic, but then they stop.
Yep.
And so it wasn't a close call, but it's kind of like I jumped to my brake a bit. And the car was an exact replica of James Dean's Porsche Spyder.
Yeah.
So that was just, I shake my head still about it. It could have been the real thing because there's rich people around. Maybe they had an Agra 55 or whatever it was, but it was probably a replica. But I had just been looking at it for hours, so I knew exactly what it looked like, and it was that car, you know.
You don't see it very often, that's for sure. It's a beautiful design, too.
Yeah, and that's what happened to Dean, too. He was some turn in front of him, you know, and so it was kind of strange that that happened to me after I'd just been spending a couple hours going over.
Right, right.
Yeah, so it was a strange situation anyway. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, and thanks for hanging on for the rest of it, Kerry. And we'll go to Thomas in La Jolla on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Thomas?
Hi, Eon. You are the best, and that was a great interview. It brought back so many memories. I mean, FM radio, vinyl records, The Summer of Love, you know. And Firesign Theater was like the Mad Magazine of radio and vinyl records. They were just the best. And what I wanted to bring up with you, though, you have mentioned on three or four of your shows about the book written by Frank Herbert called Dune.
Yep.
And also you had mentioned, you know, the upcoming movie on Dune.
Yeah, that's what I'm very interested to see if they finally do it right.
Yeah, me too. I mean, they've done two movie versions, and I wish they would do a network TV version, you know, that has 24 episodes.
Right.
Could really go into it in detail.
Or better yet, like Netflix or Amazon Prime or something where, yeah, I'm with you on that, where they could really drill down a little bit.
Yeah, Dune, the book, it brought in so many ideas in the early 60s. It was word of mouth, you know. I mean,
yeah.
You heard about it from friends and people say, read Frank Herbert's Dune. And it covered so many things like ecology or ultra-secret women's societies or, you know,
funny,
psychotropics.
Right.
It just covered everything. And the basic premise that maybe humanity would transition into a post-AI society, post-artificial intelligence, you know, after computers, after computer programming of, you know, the society, etc.
Did you hear what the Pope said this week? Did you hear the Pope's comment about robots?
Oh, no, I didn't.
I thought it was very Frank Herbert. Well, it's a lot of things. It's Philip K. Dick, it's a lot of things, but the Pope was talking about how he hopes that we'll be able to make sure that robots always serve humans and not the other way around. And I thought, what an interesting prayer from the Pope for that. So, yeah, and you're right, and Herbert definitely anticipated that. It's my friend David Dismalchin, who's going to be in that movie coming up, and I hope everybody gets it right this time, because it's been annoying to see these other bad versions. Wildcard line, Daniel is in Wichita on Coast to Coast. Daniel, my old friend, how are you tonight?
Hey, Brother Ian. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, but you're the one
okay.
I'm worried about.
You've helped me out, Bob. It's been a while since I've called you.
I know. I worry about you.
Oh, don't. God's helping me out.
Good.
Like Brother Zach, you know.
Yeah.
He went through a lot, but I'm sure he's been blessed by God.
He's not in pain anymore, and that's good.
No, I think he's in love now.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you two things. First is, when I first called you, I asked you if you went to Tuttle Creek. You were there just
yeah.
a few. And then I want to ask you if you went south through Chase County and went to Chase County Lake, where the Cottonwood River runs through Cottonwood Falls.
I've been down to Emporia. Would I have been,
okay.
if I was I going in the right direction?
Yeah, you're about 30 miles north of it. They have a little hotel along the Cottonwood River, and Chase County Lake is fed by a spring. It's in the middle of the Flint Hills. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
My brother, my Franciscan brother, and a Sioux medicine man helped me, and I've been doing really, really good for the last year.
Glad to hear it.
And I can't thank you for your help enough. I haven't bothered you.
You don't bother me. If you don't check in regularly and tell me you're okay, though, I'll be worried. So don't make it so long next time, okay?
I pray for you and your family every night.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I hope all of you are doing well.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask you a specific question that I know you're an expert in.
We'll
you
see.
Teach media and communications, correct?
Correct.
How do you feel, not politically or not as a teacher, but as a human being, about the way we receive? I don't have the internet. I rely on radio and TV, and I try to get alternative sources because I just feel when the major media has used negative, they put this election, which I really don't care about this election, but how they put one person or another in a negative light.
Yeah.
How do you teach your students, and how do you explain this?
Well, I will say I had a conversation the other day that I look forward to, and it doesn't happen often, where elections are actually about issues and not people. And that's one thing I'm grateful that we're out of this phase. And I'm not going to separate myself out from the media. I'm the media. Anybody that is in social media is the media. The media is everywhere, and we are the media. But to your point, when campaigns, spokespeople, news people, everybody gets in line behind different ideologies, I'm reminded that this is really what the founding fathers intended. So I may not enjoy it, and I don't, and I try to limit my consumption of it as much as possible while still being able to know that I'm informed. But this, you know, there's a reason why we don't have a state media, and there's a reason why we don't allow the government to control the content as much as possible. Because as flawed as the system is, this was the blueprint, and we have to trust that we're gonna, I always like to think that we're heading into a better cycle. And yeah, we go into these periods of times when we can feel the psychic tension of everything sort of pulling on us, but then it breaks. And I think that, I hope to think that we're in a period of time here coming up where we can get back to actually discussing what the real issues are and not the issue makers. What do you think of that?
And to not, to me, it's like people attack other people on both on all sides, and
it becomes a proxy. It becomes a proxy for what's wrong. Is the person becomes emblematic of what's wrong, and so then that's. Go ahead.
How do you teach your media students to avoid that type of participation?
Well, first of all, there's a difference between the opinion media, right, and that end of the media sphere. And what real, and this is going to sound controversial to some people, but when I say real journalism is a social science.
Yes.
And it is intended to be the gathering of facts. What it's not intended to be, though, is perfect. We can't make it perfect. It has to be drafted and redrafted. That's why we have the sections of newspapers where we, you know, focus on mistakes that had been made.
Right.
And I think that we have to emphasize the fact that it's never going to be perfect. And we can't look at the media and go, well, the media got that wrong. It's fake. The whole thing is fake. On either side, that's not what it's about, because we're not robots. And so that's what I hope we get back to a better understanding of the humanity of fact collecting. And that's what I try to focus on when I talk to my students. And I do focus on left and right, because I think students who are more inclined to be conservative can still be fair with opposing points of view, just as much as liberals need to be when it comes to conservative points of view.
Ian, you told me 4 years ago, I asked you, what is the difference between fact and truth?
Right.
And you gave me an excellent, I thought, because what I try to do is not so much seek out the facts. I try to seek out what is true. And when I see someone or I hear somebody blatantly attacking another person, I wonder, is that a fact
true,
or is
right,
it true?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think so. Again, for if people miss that conversation and it's come up before, is that truth, one way to look at truth is that it's facts over time. It's not isolating a particular time, saying, look at that fact, that's fact always. Well, it may not be, because just like science changes and just like we have new data coming out about the universe all the time, there's going to be new data. People are quick to, and people are even quick to call conjecture fact, which I think is important to point out. They elevate things that they think sounds true, but they really aren't. So, yeah, I always enjoy our conversations, and I will look forward to you getting back in touch again soon. And next time I'm going down to Emporia right around Thanksgiving, so I will look out for that place in Chase County, I promise you.
Okay. Okay? It's beautiful.
I bet it is. Thanks, buddy. Always a pleasure. And let's go to, I think we got Carl. What? Oh, we have no time. See, look at me. I'm so sorry. But that was worth it, Daniel. I got to be honest with you. All right. So Chris in Citrus Heights and Steve in Washington and hang on, Utah, and hang on, Canada. We'll get back to another tasty Canadian coming up as we head into this last hour. I purposely chose non-thematic music tonight because I didn't want anybody to think I was drawing some sort of point about politics this week. So let's keep it apolitical on the air, and the rest of the bumpers are just songs I like for tonight on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.